Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So over the past few years, the topic of not only how much we work, but where we work has become a very hot button issue. And over COVID, a lot of people began doing remote work or working remotely for social distancing reasons. And I've been kind of doing permutations of remote work, as I call it, for the past 10 years. I mean by that, when I came to Israel, I opened up an account while I was looking for a job. And in the course of looking, I also needed to earn some money to pay rent, to keep alive. And some places were offering freelance work. So I said, well, it's work. So I opened up a file as a teek, it's called in Hebrew, as an atzmai or a freelancer, and did that until I got a job. And then it was kind of like it actually costs money and involves complication to close the file. And it was like there's kind of no point. I may as well have this option. And that began my my experience with contract work, remote work, all of it here in Israel. And I guess when the pandemic rolled around and people were remote working, it kind of felt like a very familiar experience to me because I'd been doing it for already a number of years. And it was kind of nice to see everyone else kind of getting it. But at the end of the corona period, I noticed that there's a definite rollback. Some companies are just saying remote work is abolished. Some are down to a few days per week. And what strikes me, I guess, as someone not working for a full-time in-house company is how those kind of statements are often laden with a lot of, I would say, hostile energy. Sometimes, you know, people have said remote working is a complete failure. We don't want it. Remote workers are lazy. So it's often not just people saying we're rolling it back or this is a policy. It seems to come from a place of skepticism, distrust, and hostility. From the perspective of employees, I feel like there's so many different types of people that some introverts, extroverts that it suits some people a lot more than others. And I'm probably more on the, I would say I'm at the far end of people who it does suit. I like doing focus work and I'm fine with getting my social energy from kind of close friends in context outside of work. I can survive on that, whereas some people just need their kind of work life to provide a lot of that. But even I have, I would say, strong reservations about it. For me, the most satisfying form in which I've engaged in remote work has been two things I would say have made it better. One is having a few clients, so not working, really operating what you might call a freelance business or a contracting business rather than working for one company. Because I think when you work for one company full time, I've also done that remotely for a period. After a while, it gets very weird because invariably working full time for an organization, you are interfacing with the same people repeatedly. And when you only meet them on Zoom after a while, you feel like you kind of know them. But until you've sat with them and broke bread with them as such, it all feels a bit artificial. And I find that disconnect very hard to wrap my head around. So if you ask me what would my ideal sort of idea of a career be as people move, as we kind of more people are working for multiple companies, work for a few companies and have periodic human connection with all of them, by which I mean stuff like on-site, off-site, whatever you want. Stick people together in a place where they can just kind of say, oh, you're the guy from the Zoom call. And I feel like if you do that, even just like a few times a year, it takes all that awkwardness away. You kind of know the people now and it's easier to work remotely. So that's been pretty much my experience of it. What I'd like to ask you, Herman and Corin, is I feel that remote work actually has a really valuable role to play in our future. Particularly, I've mentioned Jerusalem, my local city, as having, I would say, particularly poor local economy compared to the center of Israel. Not that there aren't jobs here, but I find myself most of my time in Israel working around Jerusalem rather than working in it. And as much as that is a longstanding frustration of mine with the city, it's I would say, lack of a thriving startup and tech scene. Over time, I kind of feel like as we're building out this very fast rail link to Tel Aviv, which is just a tiny bit down the coast, we can actually sort of work around the situation by creating a symbiosis between the two cities, where maybe Tel Aviv remains the economic hub of the country, but it's normal for people to work remotely in Jerusalem and drop into offices in Tel Aviv and vice versa. And we don't really have to sweat about exactly where a work site is anymore. So that's really my kind of vision of it, is instead of remote work being this hot button issue where, you know, certain companies are totally against it, or you can negotiate for a certain number of days, that we move towards a kind of situation in which it's expected that companies will offer it if people want it. And it's normalized that some people work with it and like it, some people hate it, and there's accommodation for both groups. So Herman and Corinne, I'd love to get your thoughts about remote work. Do you think it has a future? Is it a growing trend? I guess that's really another question I have. Is this kind of hostile rhetoric, as I've called it, are we actually seeing that a lot less people are doing it and a lot less and companies are revolting against it? Or does the actual, do the numbers tell a different story? Herman and Corinne, let's talk about the pros and cons of remote working and how it's going to fit into the future of our knowledge workforce.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem, looking out at a surprisingly clear afternoon sky. And as always, I am joined by my brother and our resident deep diver.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. It is good to be here, Corn. Although I have to say, looking out at that clear sky makes me think about how much easier it is to appreciate the view when you are not stuck in a windowless office building 45 minutes away.
That is a very apt observation, Herman, and it leads us right into what we are tackling today. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice memo this morning that really got us thinking. He was reflecting on his own 10-year journey with remote work and how the landscape has shifted, especially here in Israel.
Right. Daniel has been doing the freelance and remote thing since long before it was the global standard. He mentioned how he started out as an atzma'i, which is the Hebrew term for a freelancer, basically just to pay the rent when he first moved here. And now, in 2026, he is seeing this weird tension. On one hand, you have companies being almost hostile about bringing people back to the office. And on the other, you have this incredible potential for symbiosis between economic hubs like Jerusalem and Tel Aviv.
It is a fascinating prompt because it touches on something we all feel. The office used to be the default, then it was the enemy, and now it is, well, it is complicated. Daniel asked if remote work is still a growing trend or if we are seeing a genuine shift away from it by employers. So, Herman, let us start with the big picture. What does the data actually say here in early 2026? Is the great remote experiment actually failing?
That is the million-dollar question, Corn. If you look at the headlines, you would think we are in the middle of a total retreat. You see these massive tech firms and banks issuing these stern return-to-office mandates, often with that hostile energy Daniel mentioned. They talk about culture, collaboration, and the spontaneous water cooler moments that are supposedly the only way innovation happens. But if you look past the press releases at the actual labor statistics, the story is much more nuanced.
So it is a bit of a PR war versus the reality on the ground.
Exactly. While some high-profile companies are pushing for 4 or even 5 days a week in the office, the percentage of the knowledge workforce that is fully remote or hybrid has actually stabilized at a much higher level than it was pre-pandemic. In fact, latest figures for early 2026 show that nearly 40% of professional roles in high-income economies still offer some form of location flexibility. What we are seeing is not a shift away from remote work, but a messy, often painful negotiation about the terms of that work. We have moved from the era of the Great Resignation to the era of the Great Compromise.
I find that hostility Daniel mentioned so interesting. Why do you think it feels so personal for some employers? It is not just a policy change. It feels like a lack of trust.
Oh, it is absolutely about trust and control. There is this term that has been floating around for a few years now called productivity paranoia. It is this fear among managers that if they cannot see their employees typing at a desk, they must be doing laundry or watching television. It leads to what some researchers call presence theater, where employees spend more energy proving they are online than actually doing the work. even though study after study has shown that for focused, deep work, the home environment is often significantly more productive.
It is like the physical presence has become a proxy for performance, because measuring actual output is harder than measuring time spent in a chair.
You hit the nail on the head. It is much easier to manage by walking around than it is to manage by objectives and key results. But here is the thing most people get wrong about the return to office push. It is not just about productivity. There are massive second-order effects at play, specifically regarding commercial real estate.
Right. We have talked about this before. If these companies have 20-year leases on massive glass towers in downtown Tel Aviv or New York, they need people in them to justify that expense to their shareholders.
Precisely. We are looking at billions of dollars in what are essentially stranded assets. And it goes deeper. Local governments often pressure large employers to bring workers back because the entire ecosystem of the city center, the coffee shops, the lunch spots, the dry cleaners, relies on that foot traffic. When people work from home in Jerusalem, they are spending their money in their local neighborhood, not at the expensive salad bar next to the office in Tel Aviv. So, there is this systemic pressure to return to the old way, even if it is less efficient for the individual worker.
That brings us to Daniel's point about the symbiosis between hubs. He specifically mentioned the Jerusalem and Tel Aviv connection. For those who do not know, we have this high-speed rail link now, the King David Line, that makes the trip in about 40 minutes. It has fundamentally changed the geography of the country.
It really has. Before that train, living in Jerusalem and working in the tech heart of Tel Aviv was a grueling 2-hour commute each way in heavy traffic. Now, it is doable. But Daniel's point is that we should not just be using the train to move bodies back and forth every single day. The real future is in that symbiosis where Jerusalem remains a more affordable, perhaps more culturally distinct place to live and do focused work, while Tel Aviv remains the hub for intense, in-person collaboration. It is a shift toward polycentric urbanism.
I love that idea of the office as a tool rather than a destination. Like, you go to Tel Aviv once a week for the high bandwidth meetings, the brainstorming, the team building, and then you spend the other 4 days in your home office or a local co-working space in Jerusalem doing the actual execution.
That is the dream, right? And it solves so many problems. It reduces the strain on infrastructure, it lowers the carbon footprint of the workforce, and it allows for a more distributed economy. But it requires a shift in mindset from the employers. They have to stop seeing remote work as a perk they are begrudgingly giving away and start seeing it as a competitive advantage.
Let us talk about that competitive advantage for a second. If I am a top-tier software engineer in 2026, I have options. If one company tells me I have to be in an office 5 days a week, and another tells me I can work from wherever as long as I hit my milestones, where am I going to go?
You are going to the flexible company every single time. And this is where the return-to-office mandates might actually backfire. We are starting to see a talent drain where the most skilled, most senior workers, the ones who have the most leverage, are moving to companies that respect their autonomy. The companies being hostile about remote work might end up with a workforce that is either less skilled or just more resentful.
It is a risky move. But what about the downsides, Herman? We have to be fair here. Daniel mentioned that after a while, only seeing people on Zoom feels a bit artificial. He talked about the importance of breaking bread together. I think that is a very real human need that remote work can sometimes neglect.
I totally agree. And I think that is the most valid criticism of the fully remote model. There is a certain kind of social capital that is built when you are physically in the same space. You pick up on nonverbal cues, you have those unplanned conversations that lead to new ideas, and you just feel more like a team. When you are just a head in a box on a screen, it is easy to feel like a replaceable cog in a machine.
So, the challenge for the future is how to maintain that human connection without the soul-crushing commute.
Right. And that is where the concept of the off-site or the periodic in-person gathering comes in. Daniel suggested that even doing it a few times a year can take the awkwardness away. If you know the person behind the screen, if you have had a beer with them or shared a meal, your digital interactions become much richer.
It is like we are moving toward a world where work is less about where you are and more about how you connect. But I want to push on the economic hub idea a bit more. If we can work from Jerusalem for a company in Tel Aviv, does that eventually mean we can work from Jerusalem for a company in London or San Francisco?
We are already seeing it, Korn. The global talent pool is becoming more liquid than ever. But there is a catch. Time zones are the new borders. It is much easier for a company in London to hire someone in Jerusalem because the time difference is only 2 hours. Trying to coordinate a team across a 10-hour time difference is a logistical nightmare, no matter how good your tools are. So, we are seeing these regional clusters emerge.
That is an interesting second-order effect. We are not necessarily seeing one giant global office, but rather these interconnected time zone hubs.
Exactly. And within those hubs, cities like Jerusalem have a huge opportunity. If we can provide the quality of life, the high-speed internet, and the community of knowledge workers, we can attract people who want to work for the best companies in Europe or the Middle East without leaving their home.
But let us look at the other side of that coin. If everyone moves to the cheaper hub, does that just drive up the prices there and push out the locals? We have already seen some of that in places that became digital nomad hotspots.
That is a very real danger. It is the gentrification of the digital world. If 1,000 high-paid tech workers move to a neighborhood because they can work remotely, they will inevitably drive up the rent and change the character of the place. It is a balancing act that local governments are still struggling to figure out.
It feels like we are in this awkward teenage phase of the remote work evolution. We have the technology, but we do not quite have the social or economic structures to support it perfectly yet.
That is a great way to put it. We are trying to fit 21st century work habits into 20th century legal and tax frameworks. Think about the complexity of a company based in one country having employees in 10 different countries. The tax implications, the labor laws, the health insurance. It is a mess.
And yet, people are doing it. Because the benefits, the freedom, the lack of a commute, the ability to be present for your family are so compelling.
They are. And for many people, once they have tasted that freedom, there is no going back. That is why the hostility from employers feels so jarring. It feels like they are trying to put the genie back in the bottle, but the genie has already moved to a nicer bottle with a better view.
I want to talk about the tools for a minute, because it is 2026. We are not just talking about basic video calls anymore. How is technology changing the remote experience? Are we getting closer to that feeling of being in the same room?
We are getting closer, but we are not there yet. Spatial audio has made a big difference. Being able to hear where someone is in a virtual room makes the conversation feel much more natural. And the latest generation of mixed reality headsets is starting to be used for collaborative design and whiteboarding. But there is still a high barrier to entry. Not everyone wants to wear a headset for 6 hours a day.
I certainly do not. I prefer my comfortable chair and my multiple monitors. But I can see how for certain tasks, like architecture or complex engineering, being able to walk around a virtual model with your colleagues would be huge.
Absolutely. But the most important technological shift is actually more subtle. It is the improvement in asynchronous communication tools. The ability to record a quick video walkthrough of a project, or to have a threaded conversation that does not require everyone to be online at the same time. That is what actually makes remote work sustainable. It breaks the tyranny of the meeting.
The tyranny of the meeting. I think every knowledge worker just felt a shiver down their spine.
It is the biggest productivity killer in the modern office. And remote work, when done right, forces you to be more intentional about meetings. You realize that most things can be handled with a well-written document or a short video message.
So, if we look toward the future, what is the end game here? Does the office eventually just disappear for knowledge workers?
I do not think it disappears, but it changes its purpose. I think the office of the future looks more like a clubhouse or a conference center. It is a place you go for specific reasons, to kick off a project, to celebrate a milestone, or to have those difficult conversations that are better handled in person. The idea of the office as the place where you sit and do your individual work will likely become an anomaly.
It becomes a destination for connection, not a factory for output.
Exactly, and that brings us back to Daniel's point about the symbiosis between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. Imagine a future where a company has a small, high-end space in Tel Aviv for those collaborative moments, but most of its employees are spread out in Jerusalem, Haifa, or even the Galilee, doing their deep work in environments that suit them.
It sounds like a much more humane way to live and work, but it requires a lot of trust. It requires managers to let go of that need to see people in chairs.
It does, and it requires employees to be more disciplined and proactive about their communication. Remote work is not easier, it is just different. It requires a different set of skills, writing clearly, managing your own time, and being intentional about building relationships.
Let us talk about some practical takeaways for our listeners who might be navigating this right now. If you are an employee and your company is pushing for a return to office that you do not want, what are your moves in 2026?
First, you have to look at your leverage. If you are a high performer and your skills are in demand, you have a lot more room to negotiate. I would suggest coming to the table with a data-driven argument. Show them how your productivity has changed, show them the quality of your output, and suggest a trial period for a hybrid model that works for both sides.
And what about for the managers or business owners listening? How can they move past that productivity paranoia?
They need to focus on outcomes, not hours. If you can clearly define what success looks like for a role, it does not matter if the person does the work at 2 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon, in Jerusalem or in Tel Aviv. Invest in tools that facilitate asynchronous work and make the in-person time you do have truly valuable. Do not bring people into the office just to sit on Zoom calls. That is the quickest way to lose your best people.
That is such a good point. There is nothing more frustrating than commuting an hour to an office only to spend the whole day in virtual meetings with people who are in the same building.
It is absurd, and yet it happens every day. It is a sign of a company that has the old school mindset but is trying to use new school tools.
Let us circle back to the idea of the economic symbiosis one more time. Daniel mentioned that Jerusalem has a relatively poor local economy compared to the center of the country. If remote work becomes the norm, does that actually help Jerusalem? Or does it just turn it into a bedroom community for Tel Aviv?
That is the risk. But I think it can be a huge positive if Jerusalem plays its cards right. If the city can foster a community of remote workers, they will spend their high salaries in local shops, they will start their own local projects, and they will create a vibrant ecosystem that does not depend on a single local industry. It is about capturing that economic energy and keeping it in the city.
It is like Jerusalem becomes a hub of talent that is globally connected, but locally rooted.
I love that. Locally rooted, globally connected. That should be the motto for the modern knowledge worker.
We have covered a lot of ground today, Herman. From the PR war over return to office, mandates to the future of the office as a clubhouse. It feels like the summary is that remote work is not going anywhere, but the way we do it is becoming more sophisticated and, hopefully, more intentional.
Precisely. The pendulum swung all the way to one side during the pandemic, and now it is swinging back, but it is not going to land where it started. We're finding a new equilibrium. And for people like Daniel, and for us here in Jerusalem, that equilibrium offers a lot of promise.
It really does. It allows us to live where we want, in a city we love, while still being part of the most exciting economic developments in the world.
And it allows us to do this podcast from our living room without having to worry about a commute.
Which is the biggest win of all, if you ask me.
I agree, although I do miss the occasional office snack drawer.
Well, we have a kitchen for that, Herman. And I think there are some dried apricots in the pantry.
I will take it.
Before we wrap up, I want to say a big thank you to Daniel for sending in this prompt. It is something we talk about a lot around the dinner table, so it was great to dive into it for the show.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. It is always good to have a reason to look at the data and see where things are actually heading.
And to our listeners, if you are enjoying these deep dives, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your favorite podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
It really does make a difference. We see every one of them, and we really appreciate the support.
You can find all our past episodes, including episode 125, where you can learn more about Herman and me, on our website at myweirdprompts.com. We also have a contact form there if you want to send us a prompt of your own.
We love hearing from you. Whether it is a technical question or something completely out of left field, send it our way.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Until next time, keep asking those weird questions.
Take care, everyone.
Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.